so much, Phoebe. Thank you, choir. That was beautiful. The presence of the Lord is indeed here. Thank you, praise team and Jennifer, for leading us in our liturgy and our prayer time this morning. Today we are concluding. It's a mini-series. I called it a mini-series. It was only 2 weeks long, so I called it a mini-series. We're concluding that today, and we began it last week. And you may remember it is called We Are Family. And of course, that's after the Sister Sledge song by the same name. And we're going to hear that song a little bit later with the band, which is going to be a lot of fun. But you may remember also that what we're doing in this series is we're looking at how the teachings of Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, which are better known as the Beatitudes, we're looking at how those Beatitudes speak to our lives today. Now, we also think that when Jesus gave us the Beatitudes, that it's likely that he repeated them many different times and across many different settings, and that each time he repeated them, there's a good chance that he kind of tailored them to the needs of the environment or to the folks who were hearing those Beatitudes for the first time. And so I learned that possibility, and I just kind of got excited about this idea of applying the Beatitudes to different contexts of our life. And so we're applying them, or a few of them, to the context of our family life. And so why are we doing this? Well, one reason we're doing this is because, honestly, as I look around the world today at our homes and our families and kind of our neighborhoods and communities, you know, I just think there's this sense in which we are not experiencing the fullness of all of God's blessing in our lives. And so I asked people last week, how many of you would like to see your family, your community, your neighborhood blessed and fulfilled in an amazing way this fall? And everybody raised their hand. And the ones that didn't, I said, well, I'm assuming that you're processing about that because the option, you know, is cursing, you know, instead of blessing. And so hopefully you don't want that. But last week we looked at a really, I think, powerful verse, and we applied it to our families. And that verse was Matthew chapter 5, verse 6, where Jesus said, he said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. And then we raised this question. We said, what is your family hungering and thirsting for the most? And that's a really powerful question that we raised. It was a great question. But today I want us to move in a new direction. Today I want to talk about peace in our homes, peace in our families, peace in our communities, and specifically, I want us to talk about the Beatitude that speaks to this. It's also a very powerful Beatitude, a powerful expression from God, and it's from Matthew chapter 5, verse 9, where Jesus said, blessed are who? Say it with me. The peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And so peacemakers are kind of like God. They're the offspring of God. They have the DNA, the stamp of God on them. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And I want to talk about that. Excuse me. But because unfortunately, so many of our fundamental life spaces are not filled with peace. So many of our communities, our schools, our businesses, our workplaces, and yes, sometimes our homes are not filled with peace. In fact, they're shaped and characterized by two factors that often negatively influence our families. On one hand, and I think we've all seen this, they're characterized by our awareness of the ever-increasing levels of violence in our society. And so it just seems like you can't turn on the TV without seeing some additional new act of violence. I mean, when I started this sermon, it was just El Paso and Dayton that were the recent kind of mass shootings and acts of violence. But now we can add on Philadelphia and what happened in Philly last week, where there was incredible violence and unrelenting evil. And so on one hand, our families are shaped and impacted by this awareness of violence and evil in our culture. Then on the other hand, I think we're talking about the conflict and the tension and the upset that we increasingly feel in our homes and with our family life. And so I'm talking here about everything like just the little arguments that we have between us that just kind of erode the relationship over time. You keep having the same argument. I'm talking about the broken things that happen in family life that impact us a lot. I'm talking about divorce. I'm talking about the upset that we experience and in our family lives. And what we know is that both of these factors greatly influence our experience of family life. And they impact us. I think we all feel a little more stressed out when we watch the TV and we see about a mass shooting. I think we all feel a little more stressed out when there's conflict in the family and there's upset and people are arguing. I think all of those things affect us. And we're stressed out about those things, and it really changes our behavior. I love a Facebook post that I heard this week that somebody posted on Facebook, put my daughter on first bus ride, and then gave like a smiley emoji, and then she added, following bus in my car to school, you know, which I just love that. Like, that's a great move, but that's what we feel like we have to do because we don't live in a world that's as safe as it once was. We struggle. We have conflict in our families, okay? So what I want to do today is I want us to talk about how being a peacemaker can both help us with, you know, to work through the issues at home and, believe it or not, also over time work to eradicate evil that we see in the world. And so I want to talk about that. But before we get to the peacemaker part, in light of all of this violence, I think it merits a comment from the pulpit, the violence that we see in our society lately. And so I want to talk for a minute about how we understand evil in the United Methodist Church. And this is really a difficult topic. There's no way I can cover this in just a few minutes. So I'm going to give you kind of a thumbnail sketch. But when we talk about evil in the United Methodist Church, we turn to the Bible and we think about what happened in the Garden of Eden. We think about what happened in the very beginning. And you remember the story. The scriptures say that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and it was amazing. It was beautiful. And in the midst of this, what else did God do? He created humanity, Adam and Eve, and he, in his own image, did he create them. And when all of this creating was done, God sat back and he looked at his creation and he said, this was all very good. And it was more than good. It was paradise. It was the perfect expression of God's love for us and our love for God. And it was absolutely beautiful. But then we turn to chapter 2. And we see what happens there with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And God says to them, he says, look, guys, this is a beautiful place. I've created it for you. And you can eat of any tree in the garden, but do not eat of which tree? Do you remember? Do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Please don't do that. And what you need to know, what's happening there is that God is saying, you have the gift. I'm giving you the gift of free will. You can choose how you respond to God. You can choose how you respond to one another. I'm giving you the gift of free will. And so you are not a puppet. I am not your puppet master. You can do and respond as you want. And so you know the story of how the serpent, the devil, the Satan figure, many think, how he tempted Eve to eat of the fruit, and she exercised her free will, and she ate of the fruit. And then she turned to Adam, and she offered him the fruit, and Adam exercised his free will, and he ate of the fruit. And you know, that just messed everything up. That just messed up everything. It was a terrible moment in the life of humanity. It was the original sin that granted us the sin nature that we all carry around with us. And it was a horrible, horrible moment in the history of humanity. And so theologically speaking, what we say when we talk about the fall is we say that two different things happen. When the fall happened, humanity was broken. The perfect relationship with God, neighbor, and self that we enjoyed in the Garden of Eden, it was gone. Humanity was broken. But you also need to hear this. Secondly, the whole of creation was broken. And so we say, from this brokenness came the evils of this world. And in the United Methodist Church, we talk about at least three different kinds of evil, sort of in addition to the devil or the Satan figure. We talk about moral evil. We talk about systemic evil. And we talk about natural evil. And so moral evil, when you see these mass shootings on TV and you hear about Sandy Hook, and how many of you remember Columbine? And now we're talking about El Paso and Philadelphia and Dayton. Those are moral evils. And so those are more than just sin, right? Because sin would be like the misuse of our free will. That's one way to think about sin. It's the misuse of our free will. And the contrary, evil is the abuse of our free will. Like, we're just doing this because we can. And so that's moral evil. Then we talk about systemic evil. When we're talking about systemic evil, we're talking about things like racism and sexism and ageism and probably all the different isms. And it's like systems and structures in society that abuse and take advantage of and devalue human beings. So another one of these would be poverty. I mean, and hunger. I mean, it's a systemic evil, because if you look around the world, we definitely have enough food for everybody, but not everybody has enough food. It's systemic evil. There's structures in place that prevent people from getting what they need. And then we talk about natural evil. And this is the one that people really struggle with, I think. We're talking about things like Hurricane Sandy that was made such a mark on our history. We're talking about tornadoes and floods and famines. Natural evils, you know, are often called natural disasters. And let me just say that people and theologians and ordination students often struggle with the idea of natural evil. And I'm not debating that today, but here's what I want to remind you of. I want to remind you that when the fall took place, do you remember the two things that happened? Humanity was broken, and what else? What else was broken at the fall? Creation. The whole of creation, what was broken. And so this is why when you get to Romans chapter 8, you hear Paul talking about the restoration, that the whole of creation yearns for redemption, he says. And then you see the end game. What happens in the book of Revelation? What's the end game? The end game is not that we kind of redo this earth. The end game is that there is a new heaven and a new earth. And so we experience that new heaven and that new earth, and we live in eternity forever. And that's how we think about evil in the United Methodist Church. It's from this brokenness that we experience at the fall. And I can't wait to get to heaven and that new heaven and that new earth and that new Iowa. It's going to be incredible. But what we know is that this brokenness, which is global and covers all of creation, we also know it's very local. We know that what this means is that our sin nature, and John Wesley would talk about our propensity to evil, well, it happens not only on a global perspective, but it happens on a much smaller scale in our homes and in our families. And it's very painful, and it causes families to break apart, and it's very challenging, and we suffer and we struggle with this smaller sort of expression of our brokenness. And so what I'm talking about here now is not peacemakers. I'm talking about peace breakers. That's what I'm talking about. And peace breakers, they come in all kinds of forms and shapes. And by the way, I'm not talking about, you know, these moments in our lives where we're kind of pleasers and we're peacekeepers. And, you know, somebody needs to stand up and sort of tell the truth and say, we've got to deal with this item. That's not what I'm talking about. That can actually be a healthy peace breaker. But I'm talking about
the people, let's start with the people in our extended family system, you know, that every time they come around, there is just a massive problem. And they are a peace breaker. And you may remember that I said that in my family system, we, you know, maybe I'm one. You usually don't know if you're one of them, just so you know. But anyway, we had one, and I'm going to call him Uncle Donnie. And Uncle Donnie, you know, struggled with addiction, and like he would come to Newton, Iowa, where I'm from, and he would go to Maytag Park. And I'm like, you know, my parents are like, what's he going to Maytag Park for? And I'm like, he's going to Maytag Park for drugs, because that's where they sell all the drugs in Newton, Iowa, which is sad, you know, Maytag Park. And every time he came around, it just messed up our family. Like, we just got in arguments, and my mom and dad would argue, should we help him, should we not help him, should we give him money, not give him money. I mean, it was really a difficult thing. He was absolutely a peace breaker, and I'm not picking on him. Peace breakers need to be loved, they need to be understood, they need to be valued and cared about. Don't hear it that way, but I'm just saying, for my family system, he was a peace breaker. You know, it can be family dynamics can be a peace breaker. This is more like extended family. I mean, gossip can be a huge peace breaker in a family system. I mean, we're talking about Aunt Marie and what she did. Can you believe that? And it's not true, but we're going to pass it on to Joni, you know, I mean, because we're gossiping. It can be a huge destructive force in any family system. It can be really damaging. You know, it doesn't have to be people. It doesn't have to be even a human system. It can just be, you know, events that take place in our lives. I mean, if you read your average stress scale, it will tell you the top five most stressful things are, number one, losing a loved one. That's not a surprise. Number two, divorce. Number three, moving is number three. Number four, major injury or illness. And number five, job loss. All of those are peace breakers. And they mess us up. And kind of regardless of who's the cause or who's the receiver or whatever, all of this creates a lot of tension and conflict and upset in our family relationships. And what we know is that this is when Jesus' statement in Matthew 5, chapter 9, has great application. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And I want you to hear a couple of things about that word peace in the scriptures. There's a Greek word for it that occurs frequently that Jennifer probably knows and knows how to pronounce, but I don't, but just go with it. And then there's the Old Testament. Do you know the Old Testament word for peace? What is it? Does anybody know? Shalom. Say that to your neighbor, shalom. And here's what you need to know about that. We kind of think of shalom and the word peace is like, kind of like lack of conflict or absence of conflict. But in the Jewish context, when somebody said shalom, they were not only saying, I hope you have peace, meaning, you know, an absence of conflict. They were also saying, I am hoping for you the highest possible good, the most full possible relationship with God. You know, the greatest experience of God's love. I not only want you to not have conflict, I want you to have God's love. This wonderful, amazing thing. So that's the first thing I want you to know. When we hear the word peace, that's how we think about it. Number two, you need to know this was an enormously counter-cultural statement that Jesus was making here, because up to now, everyone was raised with this idea that, hey, it's an eye for an eye. It's a tooth for a tooth. You know, if somebody hits you, smack them back, right? If somebody steals from you, we want you to take something from them. And so what we know is that when Jesus was saying, blessed are the peacemakers, he was calling us to something higher than that, something new, something different. He was calling us to literally make peace. Like, that's the call of this beatitude at work, at school, in the church, hallelujah, in the church, I'll say it again, in the church, at home, wherever you are, that you are called to make peace, that we are peacemakers, that God has gifted us in that way. And so this is intentionality. This is action that we take on behalf of the prompting of God's Spirit. And so Paul talked about this. He did at the end of his letter to the Romans in chapter 12, verses 17, 18, and 21. Here's what he says. Do not repay evil for evil. I mean, and don't you want to do that? I mean, somebody pulls in front of you on 285. Don't you want to say, the pastor's not around. We can give him the double barrel, right? I mean, do not. And it might be the pastor who pulled in front of you. So just beware if you're going to pull that kind of a stunt. Do not repay. And if the pastor does that, remember, we're human beings too. Just getting all the qualifiers out there. Do not repay evil for evil. This is crazy. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Wow. And then here is the power statement. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, not your neighbor, not the pastor, not the church, as far as it depends on you, here it is. Live at peace. Here's one we're going to come back to. Do not be overcome by evil. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's a powerful verse. Just sheer goodness. Just consistently being good. You know, blessed are the peacemakers. I love this, for they shall be called the children of God. So we have that DNA of God in us, that goodness, that consistent goodness. But we're going to come back to that. You know, we have peace breakers, but God is calling us to be peacemakers, right? And so what do peacemakers look like? What do peacemakers do? And again, I'm just going to give you a thumbnail sketch. I've got three tools that peacemakers use to make peace in the world. Number one, family peacemakers speak the truth in love. So they don't shy away from the hard topics in the family system. They don't shy away from the fact that people may be uncomfortable having this conversation. They don't shy away from the fact that it may not go how they think it ought to go. But family peacemakers speak the truth in love. Paul said it this way. Instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ. So the idea is that when we are speaking the truth in love, when we are addressing the issues in the family life, that we are growing more and more into the love and way of Jesus Christ. And so it's critical, though, that we're serious about the idea that we speak the truth in love. I mean, truth without love, bad idea. Very bad idea. And so what does it mean? It means that we love like this. And that when we speak the truth in love, that our love is patient and kind. That our love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. That when we speak the truth in love, we don't demand our own way. We're not irritable. We keep no record of being wronged. This kind of love does not rejoice about injustice, but this kind of love rejoices wherever truth wins out. This love never gives up, never loses faith. It always is hopeful and endures through every circumstance of life. Family peacemakers speak the truth in love. Number two, family peacemakers admit when they're wrong and forgive when they're right. Okay, so that's a hard one. That's a real hard one in the Ward household. You guys might be perfect. We're not. That's a hard one, right? It reminds me of Happy Days. How many of y'all saw Happy Days? And anytime Fonzie, right? He was like the too cool for school dude who was never wrong. Anytime he was wrong, do you remember? He'd be like, I'm wrong. And he couldn't even say the word, right? He couldn't get it out of his system. He couldn't get it out of his mouth because it was so hard for him to think that he might have been wrong. But family peacemakers, they admit up front, I was wrong. And then secondly, this is even harder. Family peacemakers, they forgive even when you're right. I mean, I'm right about this. It's the principle of the thing, right, wrong. They admit when they're wrong. They forgive when they're right. Family peacemakers, remember the six most know what are the six most important words? You should know them. I've preached about them before. Do you know what they are? Here they are. Number one, they are, I am sorry. And number two, they are, you are forgiven. Those are the six most important words of family life. I am sorry, you are forgiven. Let's practice saying that. I am sorry, you are forgiven. Now practice that with your family when you go home today. It's very, very important. The six most important words. James 5:16 spoke to this when he said, confess your sins to each other. Say, I am sorry. And pray for each other so that you may be healed, you may be forgiven. Family peacemakers admit when they're wrong, and they forgive when they're right. And then there's one more thing that family peacemakers do, one more thing that allows us to make peace. And this thing not only allows us to make peace in our family system, this thing allows us to make peace in our world. And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes a long, long time. But I referenced it. Paul says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Good over time. You may not even know it, but it's overcoming evil. And I saw a video spot about, you're going to love this, a carpenter from Iowa. Yeah. And he didn't know it, but he was overcoming evil. And he was changing his world. And we're going to see that video now.